Blog Talk Radio.
Frequencies. It's that time again, the witching hours. This is Anti-Robot Radio, and we back up in this thing. It's the year 2014, at least that's what they fucking tell us. And hey, we back here killing robots like it was yesterday, because guess what? It was yesterday, so die, robots, die. This is Anti-Robot Radio with your cat, the fabulous Moonshine Brown, and we back up in here for another incredible show, another incredible day, another incredible world, and we freaking the frequencies like no other, because only us, we can do it, dig it? Anti-Robots, Anti-Robot Society, salute, throw your fist in the air. Hey, we out here. You know what I want to do? I'm excited, I'm happy, I'm glad to be here with my Anti-Robots. Shit is beautiful. Negro-American drop. Incredible response to the concept record, Negro American. I'm so happy. You're getting it. Black rock is back. Shit, rock and roll is back. Funk rock is back. Shit, I'm back. The Fabulous Moonshine Brown, dig it. Hey, let's do this. I know when we kicked off the song, y'all heard Fade to Black, and Fade to Black is on Negro American. You dig it? So I want to play Speckles of Negro American for those who didn't catch that, and those who trying to get Negro American, go get that. It's free. It's out there right now at Bandcamp, the Fabulous Moonshine Brown, Negro American. Hey, can we play Fade to Black again? And let's play all of that. And when we come back, after I'm done rolling what I got to roll and pouring what I need to pour, I'll introduce my guest that's coming up, incredible guest tonight. You know how we do, Anti-Robot Radio. Nobody does it better. The Fabulous Moonshine Brown. Hey, run that Fade to Black from Negro American. Go get yours. I got mine. Negro American, Anti-Robot Society, salute. Die, robot, die.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Fade to black. Negro American. The fabulous Moonshine Brown. We doing it like that. Anti-Robot Radio. Anti-Robot Society. Salute. Anti-Robots. Salute. Robots. Die, motherfuckers, die. Hey, we up in this bitch again, 2014, at least that's what they say. Happy new calendar, goddammit. We're not going to say new year here at Anti-Robot Radio because that shit is not real. That's not reality. That's not life, and that's not the frequency we are trying to freak. So I say to you, happy new calendar, goddammit, because that's all it is, another page in the goddamn book. We don't know what year it is. We don't know what time it is. We don't know what minute, what second it is, goddammit. Do you know who you are? Or are you a robot, dig it? The fabulous Moonshine Brown doing it like that. Incredible show tonight. Like I said, man, fade to black. Negro American. My incredible guest, man. This is my cat, man. I enjoy having shows when I have cats that I can call a friend, man, and cats that I had a chance to look up to, man, for their genius in the field, and I call it the genius in the field that I am of music. And this brother, man, I have been checking this brother out for years, man, a fan of his work. Incredible, incredible, incredible engineer. I would like to say one of the best engineers on the fucking planet. And you know what? You know, my other engineer buddies, hey, I'm sorry, man. I said it, man. I love y'all, too. But I strive to have my recordings, you know, to sound like this brother does. He is a, you familiar with his work? He is the brother behind many of Outkast hits and the Grammy-nominated winner for his work on Cass's album. Shit, if you heard Hey Yeah, you heard this man here. Nelly, he's worked with everybody from Nelly Furtado to Citizen Cope, Earth, Wind & Fire, which we're going to talk about now. He's on the Earth, Wind & Fire project, not only as an engineer, he's also a producer. So we're looking at both halves of the card. So many, man. This cat, man, I really, 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 man. But, hey, before I babble and shit, man, like that, I want to tell you, hey, my guest tonight is the very great Neil Pogue. So we're going to have my brother on shortly, man. We're going to talk about everything, music. We're going to talk about his work on a new project with Earth, Wind, and Fire. That's right. You heard me right. You heard me right. Earth, Wind, and Fire. Dig that? New Earth, Wind, and Fire. Shit. Step back. I ain't talking about no Trey Songz shit, goddammit. We're talking about Earth, Wind, and Fire. So, hey, we're going to talk about the new project. Man, oh, man. Anti-Robots. Hey, but while I got a little time, man, and you know, now Anti-Robot Radio is 3 hours. Big change, man. I know if you have been listening, you know the change started early, but big change to my loyal anti-robots out there. Guess what? Guess what? You are now listening to Anti-Robot Radio, Thai Robot Network. I'll say that again. You are now listening to Anti-Robot Radio on the all-new, universally known Anti-Robot Network. If you tune in, we got the shows going, the listeners' counts going up, new shows. We got a new show that comes on every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock, Social Rehab Radio, hosted by my cat, my brother T. Lice and the Gullah Brothers. Doing that thing, man. This cat kicked off real early in December, man, and show's been doing well. Some great guests on there, so if you get a chance, check that out. Go back and listen to the old shows and episodes and shit. They're great, man. It's Anti-Robot Network. What else will it be on this shit? You know what I'm saying? This is what we're doing. This is about the art. It's about the politics. It's about changing the world. This is our world. This is a no-robot zone. You are free to fly in this motherfucker. There are no robotic rules here. We say what we want and say how we will. You'll see that in a minute because I'm going to tell you how it is. Anti-Robot Radio on the Anti-Robot Network. I said it. www.antirobotradio.us. Check out Wednesday nights. Check out my cat, T-Life on Social Rehab. You know, check that out. You got to check it out. Incredible shows. Most shows coming, man. We got Yank Radio coming. Ooh, we got some things happening. Anti-Robot, the network, goddamn. Yes, yes, yes. And DA, man, let's get into some quick news before my cat come on, because I know when we get on, it's going to be an incredible interview. I like to ask this brother a lot of questions. But let's talk about some real quick shit in the scope, in the matrix. So let's get off into it, look in the microscope of things that's happening this week. I don't know, man, a little music news, you know, and I always talk about frequencies, man, and frequencies are important. This year is like no other year. This calendar day, this calendar year is not like no other. I'm here to help you cleanse your frequency, you dig it? I'm here for you to understand a lot of things, but I want to say real quick, man, I always complain about the way music is right now and how it's being projected and how the gatekeepers are allowing certain music to permeate through your eardrums and freak your mainframe and make you do things. I know you hear certain songs. I know you've been riding one day and you put on a song and it's a love song and it's beautiful and you feel like crying and misting up and getting emotional. And that's what love music and emotional music that touch your soul does. And if you're riding around and maybe you listen to Pac, and I love Pac, you know what I'm saying, but I understand Pac from the translation of him being Pac, son of a Black Panther, you know what I'm saying? I understand that Pac, you know what I'm saying? The Pac everybody else see, I don't know if they get that shit or not, but you might be listening to Pac, and you want war, you want revolution. I might be listening to the Chili Peppers, and I feel a certain way. So I'm saying this to you. In this day and age of music and our influence, we got so many things going on. And right now, the music that is being pushed by the gatekeeper is not one of a healthy frequency, dig it? You hear what I'm saying? What I'm saying is not one of a healthy frequency. I tell you this, we got artists like Chief Keef. And look, I'm not downing the shorties, man, because right now, I understand right now that they're shorties, and they're doing shorty shit, and they're talking shorty shit. They don't really know life, and all they know is this grimy street life that we're creating, this kill. Where did we get this shit from? This kill each other, you know, so we got so much hate for each other. Hell, we got so much hate for ourselves. They go deeper than that. You know what I'm saying? But you have your Chief Keef and other gangster shit. See, when, you know, back in the day, you know, I ain't afraid to say, show a little age on this shit, but back in the day, gangster music for me was N.W.A., Ice Cube, America's Most Wanted and shit, shit like that, you know what I'm saying? And what differentiates that gangster music from Chief Keef, or what the slug cat name is, you know, they weren't talking about crawling through windows and robbing women and raping women and disrespecting women and talking down and not talking, taking care of their kids and shit. That shit was not what's popping. What was happening in with people like N.W.A., they was giving you the CNN. They was telling you the news of the streets, and we've gotten so far from the news. Our biggest thing now is to show how much we have, how we get, and how grimy we can be. So what I'm leading up to, you know I got to be leading up to some shit right here when I'm talking about this shit. Young rapper in Chicago goes by the name of Young QC, this little cat here. In order to live out his dreams of making it rain and do shit, this little brother here pays his friend and a female accomplice to murder his mother, the woman who brought him in this world. He murdered the mother for 2 life insurance policies that she had, and access to $90,000 that she had in the bank. This brother has himself. You go to YouTube, you type in Young QC. I mean, this probably might be the most famous little motherfucking bitch right now, and it's the last time we'll be talking about it. But he's in the idiotic robotic section. This little motherfucker pays his friends to go and kill his mother. He goes to the bank and takes out, I think, $25,000, $20,000, and goes to a park and throws money out to complete strangers, his mother's money, that he had his friends. Assassination. He assassinated his mom. Let's be real about that. Okay? So, I tell you this, and all this was to make yourself look big on YouTube and Instagram and sit and look like this. I do this for my people. So, you know, if you get a chance to check out the little brother, I tell you this, jail is for nobody, but this little brother's going to get everything he deserves. He about to be Bubba's friend, you know what I'm saying? I hope he's, this is the thing with these young brothers don't know. It's real gangsters in prison. It's real gangsters in prison. So while we influenced by the Chief Keefs and all this other bullshit that permeated in these frequencies we've given out through music, understand this. You got to pay for all actions. Look this brother up. I don't even want to waste any more time on this garbage. My guest is on the phone. You know, look that brother up. Help to you. That's all I'm saying. But my guest is on the phone. Anti-Robots. I'd like to welcome to the show Super Engineer. Cat, I look up to tremendously. This cat here, glad to say I can call this cat my cool partner, the brother, Neil Pohl, to the show, Anti-Robot Radio. Welcome back to the show, Neil Pohl.
Dig it. Hey, it's good to be back, man. Moonshine, how you doing? What?
Yes, yes. What's happening, brother?
Nothing, man. Just trying to get past this holiday, and so glad the new year has started, tell you that much.
Right. You know, getting past the whole gift thing and the hustling, but it's just the thought process of people around the holidays and shit, you know what I'm saying? The holidays come off as happy, but, you know, if you notice, man, people aren't as happy as they come off, and after the holidays, people are mostly depressed. But we won't even get into that right there. A lot
too
of
much
money
gone, trying to satisfy family members, you know, trying to keep up with the Joneses and everybody, you know, trying to please people, so you spend all your money up, you know?
So now you paying payments on a gift in December. Here it is June, and you preparing for the next Christmas, right?
Right.
Still paying the bill. Man.
Yeah.
Man, hey, I had to. I know when we was on the show last time when we talked, man. And we talked sometime. I always said I wanted to bring you back on. But I especially wanted to bring you back on at a time because – I wanted to talk to you about the Earth, Wind, and Fire project.
Okay.
I also wanted to get your opinion on some things that was released musically since the last time we talked. One thing in particular, you know what I'm saying? If I could pull up a song and get on that. But I really wanted to catch up to see what you were doing now and talk about the Earth, Wind, and Fire thing. I always like talking to you, man, because it's almost like a perspective from the expert here into the, you know what I'm saying, and your years in the industry. I always look to that. So definitely let's catch up on that. I have a couple of songs from the Earth, Wind, and Fire project. But you know what, the first thing I want to say, let's talk about how that came about. How did it come about for you to not just engineer, you produced on this new Earth, Wind, and Fire album. The legendary Earth, Wind, and Fire. How did that whole thing come up?
It came about from their last album, Illumination, and I had mixed a couple of songs on that. I had mixed I believe it was Organized Noise song that they had produced on Earth, Wind, and Fire, and then it was a Will I Am song that was that they had did as well. So from those two songs that I had mixed on the album, I think it might have been two or three I mixed, but it's been such a long time, been 7 to 8 years now. But since that time, I became real close to the bass player, legendary Verdeen White. Him and I became really, really close. And we always talked about working on the next one, but taking it to a whole another level, because him and I we kind of think alike when it comes to music. So we wanted to kind of, because that the last record was kind of like it was electronic, and it wasn't the Earth, Wind, and Fire sound that people know them by. So, So Dean wanted to get back to the Earth, Wind, and Fire sound, and me being a big Earth, Wind, and Fire fan, that's something that I was like, yeah, please, let's do that. So when the time came for them to do a brand new record, we wanted to plan out how we wanted to do it, how we wanted it to sound, because his brother, who founded the group, Maurice White, is sick now, so he's not able to be involved in the group like he used to be. So he's not really in the picture anymore. So they pretty much so now they have to get in the trenches and really figure out how they're going to make this whole thing go on. I mean, they're always on the road, you know, doing shows. But as far as doing records, that's something that they haven't done in a long time.
Right.
So we try to plan it out, and so it was really in a nutshell, it was about getting to back to earth and fire, you know, having that authentic live sound, and that being something that I'm really interested in. I mean, I love tracking live music, and production is one of my loves too. So I'm really fortunate that Verdine trusted me on the production side. So me and my team, Fulton Yard Unlimited, and then I brought in my B team, which is Black City Music, Austin Jacobs and Darren Simpson. They're out of Detroit, so they came with a sound. So between me and my partner Walt B here in ATL and the B team, Black City Music, we got together and put our heads in it and just came up with a sound, and that really is the Earth, Wind & Fire sound. So we produced three on them, and I think two, and then I was more involved in helping out produce the overall album, and I A&R'd the record too with Earth and Fire's manager, Damian Smith. So I was really involved with the record overall, really, as a producer, as an A&R person. So it was fun. It was almost 2 years in the making, you know. So it was a task, but it was fun. It was kind of stressful because, you know, trying to bring that sound back. Nowadays, you know, groups who are legends and who've been in the game for 40 years, you know, you have that feeling like, are people really going to listen? Are they going to have the same type of same type of respect for the group, because their fearless leader is not there anymore? So it's almost like trying to fill the shoes of Mr. Maurice White. But no
right.
one, no one can fill his, no one can fill his shoes, because it's his baby.
I want to say this though. When you said that, would people really want to hear that sound? You know, like, would they accept you as stepping into that feel? I think people just are so hungry for Earth, Wind, and Fire, and just that Earth, Wind, and Fire sound that they classically. You know what I mean? I have a few of the songs, and when I play them, I want to actually. I'm hoping that these are the ones that you produce without telling me. I just want to go by sounds, that just the ones that I think. And Neil, man, hey, don't be afraid to say, man, Moonshine, we didn't do that shit, man. That shit don't sound like us. But I thought I picked three that I thought that was produced by you. You know what I'm saying? You can correct me.
I was involved in the whole album, so basically I had my hand in the production. So go ahead.
Okay. Hey, well, so look, I'm not gonna even say it when it finished. We're gonna play this song, and when it finished, you tell me if this was one on hand, like directly. You know what I mean? I'm
right,
gonna play
you.
Sign On.
Okay.
We're gonna start off with Sign On.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you when we come back why I thought that was one of your personally one, not the ones that you oversaw, but one of the ones you personally are. All right, so we're gonna spin Sign On. Anti-Robots,
okay.
What's happening? This is Anti-Robot Radio. Hey, man, we on the line with my cat, man. This is my cat, Neil Pogue, the infamous, the famous, the incredible Neil Pogue. And we talking Earth, Wind, and Fire. If you just tuned in, catch up, damn it. We're about to spin Sign On, produced by Neil Pogue and his Fulton Yard crew, Earth, Wind, and Fire. And we'll be back, man, talk more to the incredible Neil Pogue on Anti-Robot Radio. This is Earth, Wind, and Fire, Sign On. Yes. Robot Radio, the fabulous Moonshine Brown. That was Earth, Wind, and Fire, and that was Sign On. My guest tonight, the incredible Neil Pogue. Yes. Hey, Neil, let me tell you why I thought that was you. So that was a good guess. I feel good about that.
Excellent guess.
Let me tell you why I thought that. And this is about me being a fan of how you approach everything sonically.
Okay.
Always, since the Outkast and Goody Mob shit, and I told you when we first met and talked, that I always dug of how you mix the frequencies with the rhythm part, the bass and the drums.
Right.
Allowing even that, and this is what I dug about you, even your approach with rock, the stuff that you did with Travis Barker and other rock stars, you are one of the only engineers that can still bring that bottom and rhythm out, where you feel the thickness
you,
in it, but still the clarity
that.
In the bottom note. Yeah.
Right.
Always dug that about you, because it's an art to that, Neil, man. I always say that to you, man. It's an art to it to be able to have that low end and still have the clarity to hear the note, you know?
Okay.
And when I actually heard the track, man, I'm listening to it, and it's very, very complimentary to the Earth, Wind, and Fire classic sound that they're known for. But it has that romp, that future romp, that stomp. It has, what I say, a little more rhythm, you being a drummer. I hear the drummer, you know what I'm saying? And now I actually got off into the vocals with Philip Bailey with that false. But the false is kind of pimpish. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
So I anchor that to the time in Atlanta. And then coming from where you come in and dealing with that. Because actually, I mean, you can actually hear, could have sang on that. Sleepy could have sang on that. You know what I'm saying? He could have demoed that.
Right.
And which I think is very cool to hear Philip Bailey still have that coolness. A lot of time when you bring older acts back, or classic or legendary acts back, they fall in this trap of trying to sound like the youth, thinking that they got to do shit that sounds like the youth and not sticking to what made them classic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Earth and Fire influenced a lot of people. So they influenced Sleepy. They influenced, you know, Prince. They influenced a lot of people. So everything that we're doing, I mean, all of us that came up on that sound, we're pretty much, we have unconsciously, we have Earth and Fire in the back of our brains. You know what I mean? So everything we do, and so many groups that we just, you know, unconsciously just, we grab little things that we heard when we were younger, you know, not knowing that they were the soundtrack of our lives, you know? And everything I did on that record, on the Earth, Ripping and Fire album, it was calculated. It like was signed on. I was trying to capture that 70s, 21st century shining star vibe.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
I was trying to capture that, because that's what people, you know, as soon as people hear Earth and Fire, they either think of September, shining star, after love is gone. So those are the songs those are the songs that really captured us. So I was trying to get that sound, but bring it in the 21st century, you know, time. Because if you listen to that hook, that sign on, it has that falsetto. That sign on comes at you just like the shining star. It hits you hard. And so, you know, everything I did from the guitar rhythm to the you know, producing the vocals, everything was trying to capture that Earth and Fire sound that people know them by. It took a while. Mm-hmm.
No, I don't want to cut you off. I'll say it after.
Say what you're saying.
I was going to say, now that you even said it, Neil, I even hear the similarities in tempo.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Now that you said it, now I can see it, and it does. And that's, it has that real classic feel.
Mm.
You know what I want to ask you, though, coming from that standpoint? And I want to ask you on both sides of it. When you're when you're producing and working with a legendary band or legendary artist, how do you approach something? Like if you're working with Earth, Wind, and Fire, when you're writing, or even producing or writing the music for it, how would you approach that when you're dealing with somebody like a bass player like Verdine White? You know what I mean? Do you let him write solely? Do you come up with the rhythm parts of that, or just let Verdine do his thing?
Yeah. See, it's one thing about, you know, groups of that caliber, that they're always thinking about what's happening now. And you have to remind them that all the people now are listening to what they did. So I always have to remind them, there is no chasing all this new sound. You just do what you do, and let's just try to create a hit. And that's what it's about.
Right.
So, you know, guys who've been 40 years in the game, and they're watching all these young kids come up, it's kind of intimidating, and people don't really realize it. So it is there isn't that much ego involved in it because they're trying to get that hit now. So they're like, so that's why you hear a lot of these legendary groups that are actually missing their mark because they're trying to chase something. But if you bring in a producer that knows their sound but knows how to bring them up to date, that's what's going to make it click. So me, who was a big fan of theirs, so I would tell Dean, I would say, look, Dean, you just do what you do. You know, people love you for what you do. I mean, all these bass players coming up now, they're doing his licks. So you just do what you do. You know, and, you know, so it's one of those things that you just have to keep going, look, let's just create a hit, let's just keep the Earth, Wind & Fire sound intact, but at the same time, let's not try to recreate the wheel, let's just keep going forward, but still keep that Earth, Wind & Fire sound intact and keep it live. Because a lot of people that are trying to program drums are trying to capture that live sound. That's why you hear all these loops. You know, the loops have live sounding, you know, drums. So my thing was to try to create, let's just lock everything in live with the horns, everything, and let's just make it sound tight, but also keep that old school vibe to it. And I think it worked, man. It's the album on the Billboard 200. It was one of their highest charting albums in 28 years. It went to number, I think number 11. So, and you know, and a couple of weeks ago, you know, we were all wishing to get that Grammy nom, but we didn't get it. But USA Today named it one of the top 10 favorite albums. So that to me gave me, I felt as though I really accomplished something. Even though I didn't get that Grammy nom, I had to tell them all. I said, look, we accomplished something. You know what I mean? Even without that Grammy nom, we did something. Like we made our mark. So we just try to come in next time and try to knock some heads off again. You know?
I think, you know what, the admiration that U.S. Day today is huge, too. The Grammy nod, you know, the Grammy thing goes back and forth with being almost like, I call it prom queen or vote for most popular. Even though the Grammy shouldn't be that, you know what I'm saying?
Right, it's all about marketplace and market share, and, you know, and CBS wants to get those ratings, you know. So, you know, you have to respect that. So, I mean, you got to have all the Robin Thickes and the Pharrells and whoever's popular up on that, you know, up in that show, because it's all about the ratings. So, you know, I can't be mad at them.
Right. It is what it is.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to play another one. I'm going to play Love Is Law. But before we get into that, I want to ask you real quick, vocals. Or maybe let's listen to the song first, and then I want to talk about vocals, working with Jimmy Bailey and tracking vocals, and maybe we'll get a little technical with it.
Okay.
Is that cool?
Yes,
all
sir.
Right. Anti-Robots, what's happening? We still up in here. Anti-Robot Radio, the Fabulous Moonshine Brown, my guest, the incredible Neil Pogue, my cat. Hey, we'll be back talking more, but this is another song from the album my brother worked on, produced, and it sounded like you were everything in that. But here's another song, Love Is Law, Earth, Wind, and Fire, on Tire Robot Radio. We'll be back. Check it out.
Helps you grow.
sound of the legendary Earth, Wind, and Fire. That was Love is Law. You are tuned to the best. This is Anti-Robot Radio on the Anti-Robot Network. My guest tonight, the incredible Neil Pohl, my brother.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Hey, I wanted to talk about... Go ahead.
No, I was saying that one was produced by the very talented J.R. Hudson, and I was involved in Berdine's bass line and the horn section and the horn session, and of course I mixed it, but the credit goes to J.R. Hudson as far as bringing the song and producing the song, but I was definitely involved in that as well, but definitely the credit goes to J.R. Hudson.
No, that's beautiful. And the horn parts, I was going to say, the horn parts are incredible. Very lush sounding horns, very clear sounding recordings. Very good.
The horn arrangements was by Benjamin Wright, very talented guy who did the string arrangements on Michael Jackson's Off the Wall. So I was instrumental into bringing Benjamin onto the project because he did some other things for me in the past, and he's an incredible guy and talented. He's been in the game for a minute, so I knew bringing him in here and putting his arrangements on those horns, I know it would be incredible.
No, incredible arrangement. The more I listen, Neil, I want to ask you a question now because we're looking at not necessary. Now in the day in the music business, you pretty much have to be able to wear a lot of hats. Coming from a field where you are known, award-winning engineer, I'm listening to now your representation on this project with Earth, Wind, and Fire. We talked about you producing. We talked about you A&R. I mean, hands-on, the way A&R is supposed to be with each track and putting people together where exactly if you bringing in parts, you still is production on that. We're talking about mixing and tracking. Did you say you tracked the whole project?
I tracked some of it. Yeah, I tracked quite a bit of stuff, but mostly it was just on the production and the mixing. Cause I mixed about 98% of the album. So yeah,
and that's like from a standpoint. That's going from the technical side, also going into the business and the creative side. What do you feel about lumping all that together, working as that? Do you feel like you feel more comfortable doing this way, being this hands-on with projects?
I mean, music is everything. You know, it's my love. So that to me was fun to having all those hats. I mean, It was great to be involved in everything, you know, especially a group of that caliber. So it was incredible because no one ever thinks to be involved with a group like Earth and Fire. I mean, this was Maurice White's group, you know what I mean? So no one ever thinks to come in and to produce a whole album on Earth and Fire. It's just not a dream that anybody has, you know. Like you could dream about producing, you know, Aretha Franklin or, you know, Whitney Houston or another male singer, but coming in and producing a band like that, you just don't have dreams like that, you know?
Right. It's definitely an incredible mark and already impressive resume, you know what I mean? I want to ask you, too, from a technical standpoint, working with someone like a vocalist like Philip Bailey, your approach to that, I guess approach from a creative standpoint first, and then I want to ask you on a technical standpoint, but your approach to working with somebody like Philip Bailey, how was it working with Philip?
Kind of got it. You have to get out of his way, but then when you feel strongly about something, you have to speak up. And that's something that I wanted to do. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't messing with his natural way of doing things. I wanted to make sure that he was comfortable with how he normally tracks his vocals, how he sings. You know, I didn't want to come in there and tell him to change anything. I wanted him to feel comfortable with what he's been doing for the last 40 something years, and I just wanted to come in and just embellish on what he does. and just get the best out of him, and at the same time make sure that I'm at the end of the session that I got what I wanted out of him. There was a couple of songs where I had to make him go back in and sing stuff over, and of course he fought me, but I had to say, look, this, you know, but sometimes, you know, it's nerve-wracking, and you know, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, this is a man that's been in the business a long time, and he was doing this before, you know, I even knew what production was. So, you know, so it's just kind of getting out of his way, and then getting in his way when it's time to get in his way.
Right.
That's basically it, you know.
From a technical standpoint, did he come in having a preference of what kind of mic he wanted to use to record on? Because, you know, Philip Bailey doing most of his vocals falsetto.
Yeah.
Does he have a preference? Did he allow you coming from what your specialty is and your genius, one of your geniuses is being engineering and having that ear, did he allow you to pick the correct mic that you chose, or did he have a preference?
Well, he did have a preference, and I wanted to hear what he normally sang on, and it turned out, you know, it turned out right. It turned out sounding good. If it was something that I didn't, you know, wasn't too crazy about, I'm sure I would have said, why don't we try this and see if he was open to it. But what he was used to singing on, it turned out sounding really, really good. And no, it wasn't anything that I really needed to change as far as the technical side of it, because it turned out sounding good.
Yeah. Okay. I even when I'm looking at it, I don't want to give all your secrets away, but even when I'm listening to it, the tracking of the drums and Anti-Robots, I know it's real cool for you to hear the conversation of music like that, because music has been so dumbed down and living in the box and the machine. So it's good that you'll give this education of analog and realistic recording, live music.
Mm-hmm.
I want to
ask,
because when I'm listening to the two songs that I heard, and you made this instance of keeping it tight. A lot of time with live music, what loses people with live music, if it's too loose or it takes away from a recording. Sometimes a live, too loose performance doesn't translate on record. You know
right.
what I mean? Well, of course,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you'll hear something and it doesn't have that pocket. It's just all over the place. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't kind of translate to the layman's ear. A lot of times, you know, you know how you can get a church player and he'll be superb playing in church, but to try to get him to record is almost like pulling teeth, you know.
Yeah, because he's used to playing live, so trying to rein him in on a session. Yeah. I mean, first I gotta give a shout out to an engineer called Kenny Moran out in California that did most of the recording of the rhythm section. Going back to the actual sound, you know, of the drums and everything, I didn't want it to sound too mechanical and too up to date at the same time. Of course, you know, I wanted to sound tight, but not too tight, where it sounds like, you know, it's a drum machine. Also didn't want it to sound too digital too. It's some things that it's hard to say. I just know what I heard or what I wanted, and I just wanted to really keep the drums locked in, because, you know, if you listen to an Earth and the Fire song, you know, the rhythm section is locked in, you know what I mean? With how those guys were, you know, and those guys are incredible musicians, you know what I mean? So, but you do want to keep it a little bit loose, but then locked at the same time, and that's all about the groove. So the groove has got to be there, and you can't overthink it too. Because nowadays people are so used to everything sounding so you know, locked in, and the vocals are so tuned, you know everything just so perfect now, in which that's not what music is. You know, music the perfect. Music being perfect are the imperfections,
right.
And But nowadays, we're so used to hearing that the auto-tune is that sometimes when you put on, now you put on an analog record, some kids will sound, oh, it sounds dark, but it isn't. It just sounds warm and nice, you know what I mean?
It just sounds warm,
like,
right. Because,
yeah, they're just used to everything being bright and brittle and tight and you know, can't even, like back in the day, back in the 90s, they used to say something called nat booty. Like, everything just got to be so tight, you know what I'm saying?
So tight, like nat booty, yeah.
Yeah, so nat booty.
I'm glad you even hit on that, Neil, because that's one of the questions I was going to ask you, because, you know, mm-hmm. even being an artist in this time, man, the way I came up in the business and even in business at a time when it was not digital. I come from a time
right.
when it was all 2-inch studios and patchwork mm-hmm. and 2-inch everything. As a matter of fact, I still have 2-inch reels. I had the
nice.
Most digital that it got was 8-ats and DAC, and still
right,
that had
right.
a warmer sound than the
oh,
digital
yeah.
has now.
Mm-hmm. True. Yep, it's true.
And what's scary about it, Neil, is because everything is so bright and tinny and real thin and shit. So you feel
mm-hmm.
like, and coming from a standpoint, if you're using live instruments, you kind of feel like you got to match that brightness. Because,
mm-hmm.
I give you an example, man. I was going crazy over this song trying to figure out if it was ready or whatever. And I remember I sent the song to you to listen to, and you was like, yo. And my goal was to say, man, I need you to mix this. What is it going to take for you to mix it? And you said something
mm-hmm.
to me that was crazy, and I'm glad I did it because the song got incredible reviews. The song I did with Big Roop, the Gunpowder. And he was like, yo.
Right.
I like it is with that old school warm sound. And the whole time I was tied up with that because nowadays everything is so bright. And coming from
yeah.
that analog coming up and hearing, you know, Sleepy and Organized and Sleepy Thing doing their thing and hearing that warmth, now
mm-hmm.
to get try to match that brightness, it's almost very hard. It's like,
right.
You're stuck in limbo.
It's always just good to just do what you do, man. It's like, don't get stuck in anything. Just do what you do and do what feels good to you. And people will, I mean, there's, people will, they will definitely latch on to it because if it's good, it's good. You know what I mean?
Right. Nah, and that's cool. And I hear the warmth. You know what? I always, man, and I know sometimes, I know you in and out the digital realm. You use both, which is cool, man. Matter of fact, I read an article a while back, and we talked about it before, and I went and got Ozone because you were using those EQs and that, you know, and I got into mm-hmm. that. So your choice of things I always kind of look at because you have a nice match of that analog warmth
mm-hmm.
with top end of the digital, which I always thought was cool, man. I think that's
mm-hmm.
the art to that, and I think eventually the art and music will be making the records not sound as bright anymore. I think later on in a couple of years, the more
mm-hmm.
dirtier you can make the recording sound, or just warm, like we're saying warm, it's going
right.
to be the art because nobody will know how to do it.
Right. You know, I always let each song talk to me, man. Each song is going to tell me how it needs to be mixed or how it needs to be recorded or how it needs to be produced. Each song talks to me in that way. Some songs need to be warm. Some songs need to be bright, you know. It's just it depends on the style of music. That's just how music is and always was. It's always going to talk to you. You know, it's like soul music is always going to sound one way, and then pop music is going to sound like this, and hip hop is going to sound like that. You know, and funk's going to be like this. So you have to approach everything according to what that genre is and how it talks to you. And that's how I approach music. So. I don't let these times really dictate to me how something needs to sound. I let the song dictate it, and I've done pretty well, you know, keeping that same code or the philosophy of it. And I think it works in that way because if you try to make something else sound like it's not, then that's when it's not going to work. It's not going to be real. It's not going to be true to what it is.
I know another question I had when listening to the drums, you know, a lot of times the tightness that you have, a lot of times when you're miking drums, right, you know, you can mic everything, mic on the snare, mic on the kick, mic on the toms, mic on the cymbal, two overheads. Do you find, or did you use that miking system with miking everything to keep that tightness, or do you find that much miking makes it a little, you hear everything, it keeps it kind of loose? As opposed to Earth, Wind, and Fire, who probably, and I'm saying, you know, they could have mic'd everything, but I'm thinking that back then they did more of a two-mic kind of thing, overhead kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Was that a challenge?
I'm not really sure how they did it, but because everything really, a lot of people don't know that a lot of the sound, it's about the room that you record the drums in. You know, it could be a small room or a bigger room. It's like all those Al Green records, it was a real tight, small room from what I hear. And visiting Motown about 3 or 4 years ago, and I was amazed how small that studio was. But the tightness of that studio made that Motown sound. So it's all about
right.
the room, you know what I mean? So it was about doing this Earth and Fire record. As far as miking it, we wanted to make sure that every drum was heard, but nothing was ever over mic'd, you know. We
right.
just mic'd the drums and mic'd the overheads and kept it there and worked it accordingly. To the room, but back in the day, right now we're still trying to figure out how to get that James Brown sound and how to get, you know, that all those old record sounds. I mean, this hard. I mean, people still trying to get that James Brown drum sound, and I think that was by accident. You know, back then you got to deal with what you have, and they probably hated it, but. You know, we love it, and you know, we're still trying
right.
to get that, Ringo Starr Beatles sound, and you know, people
right.
ask Paul McCartney all the time about his sound, and he always chuckles because it wasn't something that they really planned. It was they just dealt with what they had, and it just
what they had.
Everybody
wow.
just seemed to love it.
You know what, I never even thought about it like that, too. That's a hell of a way to look at that because, yeah. The technique with taking the front head off the kick to have that at what they call Olympus Studio sound, that open
right.
kick drum, especially for rock. Like you say, looking
yeah.
at it from that standpoint, that might not have been a preference. That might have been because the head was fucked up. You know what I mean? The head was going in the front, and we had to mic it like
yeah.
that. You know,
you never know.
Wow.
You never know what could have been happening.
Right.
I'm still trying to get that old spinners sound, that drum sound from, you know, Falling in Love. I mean, you know, could it be on Falling in Love? That drum sound,
right.
I'm still trying to catch that one, you know, with that tom-tom sound, you know, that tom-tom is driving that song and trying to get that sound.
Right.
Is, you know, that's so it's so hard to capture something that you don't know how they actually, you know, mic'd the drums, you know, so. But, I mean, I love the Al Green sound, too. And a lot of those are just janky studios from back in the day, man.
Because Al Green drums have a very tight sound. But
tight.
Sounds,
I love it.
It sounds like terse, but it's tight. It's like a tight. It's not all over the place. Because drums can go
uh-huh.
all over the place if you don't mic them correctly. It's a tight sound. Like, I don't
right.
even, when you listen to Al Green stuff, I don't even think the kid is that big.
No, it isn't. It's
you know
probably
what I'm
a
saying?
Little
like,
set, man. Yeah.
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 So
that Motown set was just a three-piece set, four-piece, you know, a little set in the corner of the room. I mean, everything was it was like the drums and the piano. Everybody was in the room at one time playing. So, some people, and you got to take in consideration bleed too, because things that are bleeding into the drum set. Because you never know that
right.
that the piano might have been bleeding into the drums and drums bleeding into the piano. And everything else
right.
bleeds into everybody else's mic, and that's what creates that sound. But if you cut
right.
one element out, if you mute one element, then that sound would have changed. But that's what made that sound work, because everything was bleeding into each other.
Wow.
See, I'm getting deep here.
Nah, that's good stuff. That's what this show is about. Because I was going
yeah.
to ask you now we're looking from this standpoint. And we're talking about consumer listening to the music or fans listening to the music. Do you think in music now as technology going? Will we still listen to music out, or would all our music be consumed through headphones, which will make a different preference on mixing and sound quality?
I think we spend most of our time in our cars. So most of the time we're either in our cars or we're listening off our laptops. And as far as headphones, being that this is the big headphone, we'll always be listening off of headphones. But the thing is that as far as headphones, are we listening to true sound? Because all the headphones now are enhanced. So what you're hearing is not actually how it sounds. So everything is bass enhanced now. Everybody wants their headphones to have more bass, like the Beats by Dre were the first of its kind to be enhanced. And everybody was like, oh, my God, this is incredible. But if you try to mix off those things, it will completely turn you around, and it'll fool you. So so you really can't listen to your mix on those things. You gotta wait until the record's out and then listen to it off those things, because it will fool you. It's almost like mixing with a subwoofer. You know, you can't mix with a subwoofer because you won't put the proper low end, and then after you listen to it back on proper speakers, you'll say, man, I don't have the proper low end because you've been listening to something that was enhanced by, that is low end and enhanced, you know? So this whole headphone craze, I think we'll always be listening on headphones, but that's just for the that's for the consumer. That's not for people like me who are mixing records and trying to, you know, produce records. I'm not listening to headphones, actually. You know what I mean?
Right. Now, I, a lot of things that you do here now coming out have that, like the mixing for headphone sound. Like, you hear some stuff that will sound, and we're back to the whole so bright, that bright, real thin, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's a real tin sound. It didn't have that. I wanna play one more from Earth, Wind & Fire. I think we're gonna play the single. I guess this is the most recent single, My Promise.
Right, that was the first single. Yeah.
First single. So I wanna play that. Maybe I should have started off with that, but I wanna play My Promise.
Okay.
And Anti-Robots, if you're out there, man, go check out the new Earth, Wind & Fire project. You'll dig it.
Go pick it up.
Go pick that up. Support that. We got the brother Neil Pogue on. I got more questions for Neil. Let's spin My Promise. Anti-Robots. Anti-Robot Radio, the Fabulous Moonshine Brown, my cat Neil Pogue. And this is Earth, Wind & Fire's My Promise. And we'll be back, y'all.
I'm
Sean Brown. My guest tonight is the incredible Neil Pogue, and that was Earth, Wind, and Fires from their latest project. That was My Promise. Yeah. Hey, what's the future for you in Earth, Wind, and Fire? Or what's next?
I would love to create something that they've never done. They've never done a Christmas album. I would definitely love to create something that is on the level of a Donny Hathaway classic, that will something that you would play for years and years, you know, something that is like
right.
a staple, something like a, you know, how Nat King Cole Christmas songs are just are classics, and they just go on forever, you know. That's the type
right.
of Christmas album I want to create with them. They've never done that, and I think it's their time now. And definitely want to create another Earth and Fire album, because I think this album just planted the seed that they're back, you know.
Right.
And they're not going to go away. That they're still selling out concerts. And they're even larger this year. They've done huge places that they haven't done in a long time, and it's really based around the push of this campaign, and I'm really happy for them. You know, it's
right.
I think it's their time too. So yeah, and just trying to create those two things, and just trying to keep it going, and just trying to still be I'm trying to stay part of the family. And it was fun. It was this record was 2 years in the making. It was great. It was I think we did a really good job. I'm really proud of it. Proud of me and my team. I'm proud of what we did, and just want to continue to do more.
That's right. What's on the agenda now? Coming up for you and Fulton Yard.
Right now, we're trying.
What other stuff are you working with?
Yeah, we're trying to produce our own acts now. We're not really trying to chase placing songs. We're just trying to create our own artists now. So, but what we have now is a talented artist named Rin Nicole, who's out of San Diego. She lives in L.A., but she's from San Diego, and she's an incredible singer-songwriter. And just trying to work with her. Try to have something out by mid year, and so I think that's the next phase of Fulton Yard. Just trying to create our own.
Okay. No, I mean I think the day of the shopping tracks and trying placements are so funny. A&Rs are here today and going tomorrow. So it is much better to create projects and move on. And would you be releasing most of the stuff that you're doing under the Fulton Yard brand? Or
yeah, it's definitely part of the brand. Hopefully, we can find somebody to partner up with if it's a major label or if it's an indie label. I'm just welcoming whatever is going to give us the best deal, you know.
Okay. And well, last time we talked, man, you had just made the transaction from L.A. to Atlanta. And I was like, yo, you left L.A., man? Because, you know, I love L.A. L.A. to me is got things going, but I know you had a vision. How are you liking the transition from being from L.A. to Atlanta now, back to Atlanta, so to speak?
I mean, I love it. It's this is where the Renaissance was. You know, this is I came here back in 1990 from my journey is from Jersey to California, then to Atlanta, where I was there for 12 years. I was here for 12 years back in the 90s, then I moved back to L.A. For 12 years. Now I'm back here again. It feels great because I think there's a lot of fresh talent here. It's a creative city. It always has been. So back in 1990 when people were moving to California, I said, okay, let me take this leap to Georgia and see what's happening. And now that people are moving to California again, I said, let me take that leap back to Georgia, you know. So, you know, so it's, you know, so no, I think it's great, man. This is ATL's time once again, because I think it's a lot of creative energy here that really needs to be found. It's hard to explain. I just got that feeling for this city again, you know. And I think it's going to be great in the next couple of years. I think a lot's going to happen again.
Does it feel, because that time you're talking, I was at around that time. Does it feel like that Atlanta? Like, do you remember that feeling of during that time with TLC and Organized Noise and Dallas Austin and Jermaine Dupri, and you know what I mean?
Right.
Does it feel like like that time? Yeah,
it feels like that time, because when I first got here, I was working with Bobby Brown, and I didn't know of all those producers. I didn't know anybody yet. All I knew was I was working with Bobby Brown on his album at that time, and something told me to just stay, you know. And I stayed, and it was about the unknown. I mean, L.A. Reid and Babyface had moved here, I think, a year before that. And it was just about the unknown, you know, and I have that same feeling now. It's about the unknown, because the same people that were, you know, doing that made this city what it is are not really hot right now. You know, the Organized Noise and Dallas
Right.
and Jermaine Dupri, but they're off, you know, they're not hot right now. But so I think it's back to the unknown again, you know, and I love that feeling of not knowing what's going to happen. You know what I mean? So that to me feels great.
Okay. Because I know, man, as I was looking at, and Atlanta was one of the places, man, I love. Atlanta taught me so much. As I saw it change from, I guess, that guard of Dallas Austin, you know, Organized, that time you start seeing it change into something else that kind of bothered me for a while, to see that creativity, because Atlanta does have a creative, Atlanta has a lot of genres people don't know about. Atlanta has their hip-hop scene, everybody knows Outkast and the Southern stuff, the Jeezys and all that stuff. Atlanta has a rich R&B genre, rich R&B. Atlanta also has a rock genre that people don't know about. People come there, Seven Dust, you know what
true.
I'm saying? It's like, it has
true.
A rich one. So I always love Atlanta because they had that meshing part. I never understood why Atlanta had that much going on creatively, and Miami was missing that bar so much. You know what I mean?
Right.
It seemed
right.
like,
true.
How did it reach there and not get to Miami? Miami kind of got lost in the shuffle of it. Not to even speak bad on Miami, but it kind of got lost in that shuffle.
Yeah, it really, anything past, I think, the Estefans out there in Miami, it never really had its mark, you know. Of course, you got, what's the guy's name out there that's rapping now? He's been out there for years.
Rick Ross and Trick Daddy and Luke.
No, it's the Puerto Rican guy now. I think it's Puerto Rican. I'm not sure if he's Latin.
Oh,
he's killing right now. He's like got all the features with Jennifer Lopez and everybody.
Yeah, Pitbull,
right. So he's got his own thing happening now. I mean, he's switched. He's completely flipped it around. I remember he was just rapping back in the day, not to the sound he's doing now, but he found his niche. He's killing it, you know. But as far as Miami, the city, it never really made its mark like ATL did. I mean, you know, you got the Pharrells that live out there, but he's a Virginia Beach guy, so nobody's really screaming out MIA. You know what I mean? It's just a place where people just live, you know.
Right. I had spent my time, even when I was in Atlanta, my thought was always, you go to Atlanta and you get the vibe and try to bring it back down to Miami, because I always felt, and just like how you feel about Atlanta, that it's whoever did blow in a different genre or doing something else would be king here, because they don't have that, you know.
Right.
But Atlanta always had that inspiration, you know what I mean? And
right.
When you told me you was moving, I was on the fence. I was like, you leaving L.A.? And then when I thought about it, I was like, man, I love Atlanta, so I see it, you know?
Yeah, it was definitely time. It was time. You just got to go by what you feel, you know? And it was definitely time.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's incredible, man. I love the Earth, Wind, and Fire album. Last question I want to ask you.
Okay.
Moving from L.A. Now, I know with L.A., I know you were a lot of work coming through, Do you find that the workload changes? I know you said you're concentrating on just doing your own acts. But coming from a standpoint of you being a called upon mixer, do you find that the workload changes?
No, not really. I have my clients when it comes to the mix side of it, so I have that going. That hasn't stopped. So, you know, that's one of the things I love doing. So that's never going to really change. Your phone still rings. So hey. It's a blessing, you know.
Not that I ever thought it wouldn't, man. Because if you want that sound, I don't care who it is. Nerd, when they heard what you did, they had to let you mix the album because you have that.
Right.
You have a sound, so you want that sound. I think, and you know, I'm an organized noise fan too. But just as important as organized noise was, I think that what you did with the mixes.
Mm-hmm.
Help with that sound. It was all.
Yeah, I think everything has.
Yeah, it had a whole place in it.
Yeah, I think it's teamwork. Everybody has their job to do, you know. And during that whole era, it was my job to take it from what they did and give it to me and take it to that next level. So I'm glad people liked what they heard, and so we accomplished that. But, you know, going back to the whole L.A., moving from L.A. to Atlanta, you know, a lot of people didn't even know that I was living in L.A. When people would see me, they thought I was still living here. So it's funny that now I'm back here now, but people still couldn't connect me with L.A. You know, they always thought that I was here. So every time I would meet up with somebody, say, "Oh, I thought you was in Atlanta." And I'm like, "No, I'm here now." And, you know, so I'm sorry.
No, I was gonna say before I let you go, man. I know you gotta go, but if you could choose one project, one artist, or anything up to now, you know. More will come, of course. Up to now, what would be your favorite? And that's probably a dumb question because it would probably be Earth, Wind, and Fire. But what is your very favorite experience? Mixing, production, so on, like whatever, either one. But what in music, what has been your greatest accomplishment, you think, musically?
I think waterfalls probably. As far as mixing.
Well, just in general, how you love, but mixing, waterfalls.
I'm sorry. Say the question again, so I can make sure I'm answering it right.
Okay, I was saying if you can pick any project, song, artist that you can say was your most memorable project to work on or most memorable song, what would you pick? Your shining accomplishment.
Man, that's hard. Today, I guess I would say
it's not over.
I would say Waterfall because I was in something about that song. I think that song made such a big mark back then because of the subject matter about the whole AIDS thing, and then. I was involved in arranging the horns on that, and I was really focused in on making that something great because it was different. I mean, the whole subject matter was different. We were, you know, I was there from tracking it to being involved in a lot of it, you know, to arranging the horns and being involved a little bit in the vocal sessions. And you know, I tracked that whole song from top to bottom and mixed it and everything. So that to me, as far as, and that, you know, it's no reflection on anything else I've done, but something about that record, I think it was just a special record. And till this day, every time I hear it on the radio, I'm really proud of that record. But I would say, you know, another record I'm really proud of, because, you know, sometimes if I feel though that I've worked on so long hours, come home just beat down, tired, you know, those are the type of records that I really feel as though, you know, and once everybody loves it and, you know, and it sells a whole bunch of records and all these accolades, you know, that to me that justifies what I've, all this, you know, blood, sweat, and tears that I went through. And I think Waterfalls is one of those songs that, you know, it was a special record. And, you know, from the time we recorded it to the video and everything, that's one of those, you know, classic songs. So I think that was, you know, that shining moment.
I think that's a very good choice. Waterfalls is definitely, man, you hear Waterfalls now, it has the same impact that it did then. I think Waterfalls is an incredible song. I think, personally, as far as, you know, organized goes as production, that is the height of their production to me. Not, you know, not saying that's it, but it is one of their greatest songs. Waterfalls is incredible. Incredibly written. I mean, it's just an incredible song. The sound on it is incredible, all the way down to the envelope bass parts on it, the bubble bass, the talking bass. I mean, everything is incredible on that. The horn parts are incredible. And at that time, a lot of the elements in that song, you didn't hear them in that song, or you didn't hear them like that, because if you heard horns, they were keyboard horns, and they had this soul sound. But that, the horn pars and the analog bubble bass, man, was incredible, man. And when you hear that now, Waterfalls now is elevator music.
Right.
You're in the elevator, you'll hear Waterfalls somewhere. So I think that's that classic. When you were saying, like, you know, I want to give Earth, Wind, Fire that classic song that they play, I think you did that with Waterfalls. You know, it's crazy.
And that song is so special to me, that the mic that I cut Tion's vocals on, I don't even use it. I keep that mic, you know, it's untouched now. I don't even use that mic because that session was so special to me. And I don't know, maybe I need to somehow put it in the Grammy Museum, talk them into it maybe. But
eventually I think it will be. Because I see it just going on. It still has that sound that's always playing. Another one I think the height of their songs is Don't Let Love Go with En Vogue.
Yeah, Don't Let Go by En Vogue. Yeah, that was another song that I was involved in from top to bottom that I'm very, very proud of. You know, that was Organized Noise, probably second song into the pop world, and that was another number one song for them. So, yeah, it was I think, you know, there's a lot of history made back then, and something to be really, really proud of.
And hey, did you get a chance to hear the Beyonce album? Did you hear any of that?
Yes, I did.
What's your take on that? Now, look, I that's one of the, I know I said I wanted to get some stuff that was released this year, and just your quick take on it. On the album. Now, you know what? Without saying, I think what she did in the marketing and the independence of the album is an incredible thing, and it does great things for independent artists, people releasing it. It shows that, look, you can get the music from the artist to the fan. You know what I'm saying? You get the artist to the fan and no middleman. So I thought that was incredible. Now, sonically, what did you think about Beyonce?
Sonically, I thought, you know, I'm a very vocal guy. I think that is how it was marketed was genius. But I personally, you know, I was hoping that the record matched the marketing, meaning that if you want to have classic marketing, make a classic record, you know, and that comes from Sonics to everything involved in it, and you know, but that's just me. I'm very vocal on stuff like that because I want people to make classic records. You know, I really want people to really put their minds into making classic records and not just be single-minded, because this is a single market, but don't think singles. And I think it was great that Beyonce didn't think singles. She felt, let me put this album out, which was great, and I'm hoping that more people do that. Let's not think, oh, let me get this single out. Let's try to change the game. And that's what I loved about what she did marketing-wise. She changed the game by, you know, I'm not going to give you a single to just marinate on. No, I'm going to give you an album, you know, and I guess the single will be picked. But let me just have you buy this album. And that's what we used to do. We used to go to Tower Records and we'd go buy the album, you know. So it wasn't this thing that we go and we pick. Of course, we would go and buy the 40, 45, yeah. But at the same time, we'll buy the album. But nowadays, you know, we go on iTunes and we pick and choose what singles that we want to buy. And to me, that's no. Make people buy the whole album. You know what I mean? Let them really listen to the whole body of work. You know, don't give them a choice of picking and choosing which songs that they like. I never understood that whole thing, you know. So I hope this changes the game of people. Of not having this big giant marketing plan of you got, you know, months and months before the album comes out. If it's a superstar artist, put it out. People are going to buy it. They're going to go crazy. People just lost their minds. Oh, my God, the record's out. You know, and then they feel as though, oh, my God, you know, they feel as though that they have to have that record. Like, if you don't buy that record, you're like, you know, you're not in the game if you don't buy this record. But I think people need to make more classic records so they feel as though that they have to buy the album. It's like the Adele record. Like, if you didn't have the Adele record, you felt as though you weren't living on this planet. You know what I mean? It was just one of those records that you had to have because it was such a great album. And that's why it sold over 10 million, you know, albums, just like the Outkast record. Like, you had to have that record. I don't care what color, what world you were from. You had to have that Love Below, you know, speaker box album. You know, and that's why it sold so many records, because you had to have it. But we have to put our thought into making records nowadays. Don't just, you know, make a couple of good songs and then the rest of the album is okay. But I just, going back to Beyonce, I didn't mean to get off the mark, but I just wish that she would have made a great record, something that's undeniably classic. Somebody else made, Beyonce fans probably think that it's a classic, undeniable record, and that's beautiful, you know, but I'm saying make it for the people that aren't Beyonce fans. That's what you got to make records for, people that are not your fans. And you know, and that's what I was trying to do with the Earth and Fire album, not just get the, because it's too easy to get the Earth and Fire fans. That's easy. No, I want to get, where else can I go, who else can I get a pair of ears? You know what I mean? That's all I wish for our, you know, for people now, is to make great records. You know what I mean? I think it's important.
It's important, man. I totally agree with everything you said about it. A couple of weeks when it went out, I went in and I praised the fact that the marketing on it, very disappointed on the actual music. But this is my thing with it, and you said, and you pretty wrapped it up good, classic. They're pushing Beyonce so much to be the next, I hate the word diva, but diva in training. She was supposed to be the next Diana Ross, Whitney Houston,
everything.
Tyler LaBelle,
but the next Diana, Aretha, everything in one package, you know, because we don't have that. We don't have Aretha, Diana. We don't have those Chaka Khan. We don't Phyllis Hyman. We don't have these individual great singers nowadays. So now we have to depend on this one person, you know, giving us that, and that's a shame. And all the pressure is on Beyonce because it's an American Idol type of era now, you know, where things are based on how big of a singer that you are. You know, I was having this discussion with somebody who said, if Prince would have auditioned for American Idol, they'd have been, no, you're not going to Hollywood, because they're looking for certain type of singers. You know, if you'd have got Bob Dylan on there, he would have never made it. All these superstars that are classic artists right now, they wouldn't have made it past Randy
Jimmy
Jackson,
Hendrix,
everybody.
Right.
No, nobody would have made it. So now we have the wrong idea of what an idol is. You know what I mean? It's not just Beyonce who can sing somebody through the roof. No, it's about that person who is not a great singer, but they just have that magic about them. It's not about how great you sing. It's just being a great artist. You know what I mean? And I think that's why we really need more singer-songwriters nowadays. We need really less solo artists and more groups and more singer-songwriters and less produced artists, meaning that what I mean less produced artists is that we need less albums that have all these different producers on one album. I think that has diminished what this business is about. I think that if Beyonce would have had that great marketing plan but one producer on that whole record with that one vision, it would have been incredible. It's like Michael Jackson Off the Wall and Thriller.
There's
a reason why those records are classic records. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because you had one great producer with a great artist, and you're going to come out with something great.
I totally agree with that, and I'm glad you say Off the Wall and all that, because exactly like you said, because the reason why Al Green's records was like that, because he had that one producer that he stuck with. The reason why Off the Wall, Quincy Jones, they stuck with that sound and it worked. Actually, if you ever think about this, and just a prime factor on this, Janet Jackson always did well on her records until she stopped messing with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
Right. Thank you. That's another example.
The minute
Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, Janet Jackson thing, that whole triad right there with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and Janet Jackson, that's what made it great. And there was a reason why Missy Elliott's first couple of albums were classic records, because it was her and Timbaland in there just knocking them out. It was just a magic. It was just what they understood each other, and they went in there and just made a classic. That first album, that first Missy album, is still an incredible album, you know?
Right. I mean, we can even talk about Snoop. Shit, I don't think Snoop's been right since he hasn't been with Dre.
Right. Dr. Dre with the Snoop album. What are you going to do? That first DOC album. I mean, Dr. Dre. Just, you know, having that one producer, you know, you can't go wrong. You know what I mean?
Well, everybody's chasing for what is hot. So if bands can make them dance this time, I want the producer of did bands can make a dance. But I also want to sound like Miley Cyrus. But I also want to sound like this, and I want to sound like now. Today we don't have records that are cohesive. We have records that sound like a jukebox.
No one has identity. Back in the day, you turn the radio from back in the day. You go, you know who Stevie Wonder sound with. You know what Gap Band, you knew what the Isley Brothers were, you knew what Parliament, everybody has their sound, you know what I mean? Everybody had their sound. Nowadays, you put the radio on, you don't know who it is. You're like, okay, it sounds like, but who is singing? The singer has no identity now, you know? Like, you really have to listen in for like a good 2 minutes in the song or a minute in the song to really go, oh, that's, you know, and that's crazy to me, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's really a shame. It's just a melting pot of just, you know, just a few guys, a few hot producers out there, and God bless them. I have nothing against them. They're just doing what they're doing, you know. But in a nutshell, these artists are really suffering because they don't have an identity. And so you're going to find these labels throwing things against the wall and seeing if it slides down because there is no identity. No one has it, you know?
And they're so desperate right now, just trying to find that duplicate or something like that. It will be incredible to see more artists come about, like the Bob Dylans and, you know what I mean, the Zeppelins and the Betty Davis. Will we ever have a Betty Davis now, you know,
right.
Aretha at that time, or Ray Charles.
Right.
Those
soulful
voices
singers,
that's not
man.
The conventional auto-tune and perfection. Right. Everything is perfect and
right.
every measure, every instrument is mechanical.
You know, it wasn't
yeah.
a mistake that Miguel blew up. That's not a mistake. It makes sense because he came in with a raw sound, with a vocal sound that wasn't auto-tuned. It was raw. And I don't think people really understood why they liked it. It was just good music, you know. He wasn't trying to make his vocal perfect. It just had a mood. It had a vibe. It had substance to it, to that song that he came out with. And I was not shocked when that song blew up through the roof, man. I was like, yeah, I understand why. And I don't think people understand that it's about just good music. You know what I mean?
Right.
And,
it's the last.
That's what he is. Yeah. He's another artist that wouldn't have made it past Randy Jackson. He wouldn't have made it past Randy Jackson. You know?
Hey, and you know what's funny about that? Randy Jackson, as is from the school of, he should know better than that. You understand
yeah.
what I mean? Like, come on, man.
Uh-huh.
Randy
right.
Randy was around Prince. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
come on now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But wait, Neil-O. Wait, Randy has credit to finding Van Hunt.
He does. Hunt
wouldn't have made it on. He wouldn't have made it on American Idol.
That's
you know.
True. So I think Randy was just doing his job at that time, and they set a precedent of this is what we want on American Idol, and it's entertainment. There's a reason why, you know, that first week. All we see is all the outtakes of all the people that can't sing, and we're sitting there laughing for the first week of American Idol. It's entertainment. So Randy was getting a nice check based on what that show was based on. So I can't blame Randy Jackson. It was, you know, he was told that, okay, this is what we're going to let through and not let that through. It's all calculated, and they wanted big singers and nothing that had a vibe to it. You know, any type of substance. There was a couple of good things, and that got through American Idol. But the bigger picture, no, it was not based around music. You know what I mean?
Yeah, American Idol, I think lost it. The Voice. I'm more a fan of The Voice.
Yeah, people like The Voice.
Hey, man.
Because it's more realistic.
Right. It's more about the talent than the look by the time, you know what I mean? So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if we go to an era of that, that's a cool thing. But I also think the look, and what I mean by the look, I mean the presentation. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
When you saw Earth, Wind & Fire, the way they came out and presented themselves, they were cool as hell. When you saw War,
right.
that was cool as hell. When you saw Jimmy,
right.
you was like, yo, I want to be Jimmy. You know, I still
right.
look at Jimmy and look at that. I was a fan. I'm a fan of Lenny Kravitz. You look at Lenny Kravitz, you're like, yo, that's Lenny.
Right.
That's Prince. You know what I'm saying? And I think nowadays
right.
we don't have that star appeal anymore. Nobody's trying to perform full
right.
out. You know what I mean? I mean, we got CeeLo
yeah.
and Janelle Monáe and Miguel. I think Miguel performs and carries himself as someone other than the plumber on the stage. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have
right.
that whole thing.
Right. All the groups that you named came with their own ideas, and they came in the door knowing what they wanted to be, I think. And the problem is now a lot of artists are made into something, and they have a whole team of people tell them what to wear and how to stand and when to talk and when to do this. So it's not real. And a lot of this music nowadays, this music game, is really not real, you know. And that's really a shame, man.
It's bad. Any artists now that you heard this year that you dig outside in the Earth, Wind, and Fire stuff that you like really dig that caught you?
I'm really picking Lord, man. I'm really picking Lord. Lord is, she's doing her thing. I mean, and they're playing her on Black Radio, and that's, to me, that's incredible. But there is a positive and a negative side to that as well, because it makes you feel, okay, now we have a Caucasian chick that's being played on Black Radio, so what does that say for us? You know what I mean? It makes it, okay, we don't have anything different. You know what I mean? That,
right.
You know, so we got to, so now Lord is on, so now Black Radio's playing Lord because that's something different. It makes me feel like, wow, we don't have nothing like that. I'm not, and this is not a racist issue. I'm not being probably racist. I'm just trying to say that as a people, we don't have anything of that substance like that. Something that's so different, groundbreaking. I mean, if you listen to what she's, you know, she's singing about some stuff that's just cool. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just she's doing her thing. You know, and she's got one producer. The whole record is produced by one person. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
right.
That's not an accident, man.
No, that's not an accident. I hope the artists out there listen to this conversation, man, because this is incredible. If you're an artist, man, or you're a singer, a songwriter, a musician, a producer, you should really listen to this. And I always talk about the one producer making that sound and not making it jump over, like, all around like a karaoke. And we're talking about Caucasian artists. You got to look at even Macklemore. Macklemore was the biggest hip-hop artist of the year, and only one producer did the whole project. So,
and I'm not mad at them, man. They did their thing, and he's rhyming about stories. I mean, you know, he's a straight storyteller. You know, Slick Rick was a storyteller. Biggie was a storyteller, and right now Macklemore's coming in storytelling, making us laugh, making us think, and we don't have that. You know what I mean? So it's not a mistake that they're killing right now, even though it is easier for them to be hot. But let's not be wrong. It's easier for them, yeah. But at the same time, hey, you can't mistake it for it not being hot. You know? I mean, he's spitting.
Right.
He's spitting. He's putting people to shame, man.
Real quick before you leave, Neil, I think we got a call.
I'm having
somebody.
Fun right now, man.
Oh, so let's talk, man. I'm thinking you got to go. I can keep you on, but we got a call for you.
You know how we do.
All right, let's take a caller. Anti-Robot Radio, welcome to the show. Rapping with my cat, Neil Pohl, man. Incredible. If you're a singer-songwriter, man, this is for you, man. You don't get shit like this. Caller, welcome to the show.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on the fact that the Blue Eyed Soul is kind of taking over right now. I don't think it's that we don't have anything of that sort or anything unique like that. I think because it's expected of us, they don't see it as unique anymore. For us to be seen as unique, we have to be doing some alternative or some maybe metal or something that they don't expect from us. Which is crazy because it's basically telling us we can't be who we are to be successful. But she's doing what there are people doing that. They're just not being signed for it. They're in the underground. You know that. You both know that. I know you have plenty of the good artists on this show all the time, but it's basically discouraging us from being who we are and telling us in order for us to be accepted or successful in any kind of way, we can't do what we're known for. We got to be outside of who we're known to be. And right now, she's us. So for us to be accepted, we got to go be her.
Also, check it out, sister. You got to understand also that we're not taking charge, you know, of our sound. You know, we have other artists that are taking our sound and making something out of it. And we don't even... You know, a lot of white artists are going back and listening to all the Motown stuff and coming back and being really, really soulful. But not saying that we have to go and grab the Motown sound and be soulful, but we're not. We would rather jump on the club market just to make a buck rather than staying true to what we are. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of underground people that are staying true to what they do, so they're not living by the major label code. But people that are coming in the game are living by that major label code, thinking, okay, the only way that I'm gonna get on, I got to do this house club, European sound. But we can also stick to our guns and do what we want to do, and we can just like there's like YouTube stars that are sticking to their guns and they're winning. So if we can, as a people, if we can stick to our guns and do stuff that we want to do, I think we can actually win and turn this major label system around. There is a way. Things are not impossible. People have been called crazy all the time, so I'd rather be called crazy. But there is a way for us to stay true. So, and that's one thing that we have to do, just like the underground people. The people that are above ground have to stay true as well. I mean, I love Usher and people of his caliber, but we really have to stay true to what we want to do. And, you know, people may want to do the club sound. I'm not knocking people that want to do the club Euro sound, but don't just do it because that's your only way to be in the game.
I agree with that. And on that note, you have to kind of commend those artists who are mainstream, who have taken the opportunity to utilize their name independently. Like, I really think what Beyonce just did was very innovative, although I think it was crap. But I do commend her for doing what
Most
she
definitely.
Did. But,
right.
I mean, if we can support the underground and the independent artists monetarily and actually listen to it, because we have plenty of avenues. And like you said, the YouTube star, that's great that that's an option for independent artists now, but we have to support it in order for it to be that way, or else, because
right.
we've never been in charge. It's hard to take charge if we've never been in charge of that. And as long as we have to go through an A&R,
right.
you know, independent is the only route. Going through A&R
right.
will never get to where they want, because we have to be who they want us to be.
In I think order you hit it right in the head. Yeah,
right.
We have to support our underground artists, and that's what we don't do. It's like it's almost like we don't go and see black movies. We have to support our own, and I don't want to make this a racist game, but this music game is a racial game, and we have to support our own. We just can't support the Rihannas. We have to support the underground artists that are just as talented too.
Right.
But we have to make each other aware of those underground artists as well, because we hate on each other, because we're all fighting for that light bulb. We're all bobbing for apples, and we're so in competition with each other that we have no camaraderie, because we would rather, you know, kick our competition off the stage rather than saying, yo, this chick is dope, this guy is dope, but let's all stick together and make something happen. And that's why you have companies like DreamWorks, because they stick together. You know,
right.
So as
and
a people,
that,
we have to stick together.
That creates a fear within our underground artists or our artists that have already been mainstream and now have the opportunity to be independent, because we don't support each other and we do hate on each other and have that mentality. But that's why it's important to see artists like Prince and Beyonce do what they did, to show the ones who already have the name and have the voice that you don't have to go and re-sign because you're afraid of having to promote your own stuff or having to pay for your own tours, and you know that it can be done. It can be
right.
done. So I think that was a very important move that she made, because people laughed at Prince when he tried to do it.
He's still doing it. True.
So
yeah, people were laughing at him when he was trying to do it.
Right.
You're absolutely right.
Right. So if she can just come with some better stuff, then,
right.
you know, in my opinion. But
I didn't think I would ever hear somebody say that Beyonce stuff is crap, because I'm just right now I'm shocked, and I commend you for saying what you really, really feel, because some people are really afraid to say that Beyonce stuff is crap or that it's not as good, because everybody is peer pressure. Everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon because because I don't know, it's just a lot of fear factors going on now. People don't want to say something is bad, so I commend you on saying something that's true to your heart, or from your heart.
Cool. Thanks, you guys. I love the show.
Thank
Keep
you.
It up.
Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Thank you very much. Yeah, Neil, hey, man, let me say something about that. Garbage, the album was garbage. I mean, you know, hey, I mean, listen, hey, I don't even want to say it's garbage because I know what it takes to make an album, and it's going to be a fan for different things. I think for what they were pushing, she really dumbed down. I think she actually went backwards instead of going forward. I think she felt the need to want to fit in and felt the need to I mean, if that record would have went any longer, I think we would have heard her start rapping. She would have did a verse with Jay-Z, and it would have been a full-out cypher.
Right.
You know,
that made it
easier.
You know, I just think I think she's always been, it's almost like she's that Houston girl that always wanted that inner Beyonce to come out of her, which is great. But she's gotten us so used to her being one way, and then when you come out with more of a hip hop sound, it throws me personally. So, if that's who she is, great. But the Beyonce that I want to see, I just want her to make a great R&B record that we all can listen to and that we all can ride in the car with our kids. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's just, I want that record. I don't want a record where I can't play it in front of my kids. Those are the type of records that I grew up on where everybody can sit back and listen to it. And I think nowadays it's a shame that we can't all be in the car listening to a record, you know, with a younger member of our family in the car. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or even with my daughters, you know.
Right. That album is definitely, you know what, and I have daughters too, Neil, and I don't want them to hear that record. I really don't want them to hear that record.
Yeah. And that's, I'm kind of disappointed. I think, I think right now a lot of people are making records. It's like, how far can we actually go? Like, everybody wants to keep shocking each other. You know, they want to keep, you know, I remember back in the day when the Isley Brothers had that song and they said bullshit. Excuse me, I don't know if I can cuss on this show, can I? Sorry about that.
Yeah, of course you can.
Don't apologize
at all.
You know, so when they said bullshit, I was shocked as a kid. I was like looking around like, whoa, they said bullshit, you know. So, and that's as far as it went. And then, you know, then back to business again, because they were making a statement. You know, they were making a record that there was a reason why they had said that word. But I said, now there is no meaning to everybody's lyrics. They're just saying it just to shock the next person, or it's not cool to say nigga or bitch or hoe or whatever in your songs. Like, you can't even make a regular song without, you know, it's almost like you're corny if you don't say bitch, nigga, hoe, shit, something in your song. You know what I mean? And I think a person has to be, you know, think about it and not be. I'm trying to find a word. I can't find a word right now. But I just think it's really a shame that we can't find records that, you know, we can all listen to. And I don't want to sound like an old fogey. I just want to make some really classic records that we can all just sit back and have fun with.
The truth is that we don't have that record. Yet to have another What's Going On, yet to have another Are You Experienced, yet to have another Temptations or another Beatles, because it goes across the board. Really, really, and the caller hit upon this one thing, man. The caller hit, like, in order for a black person to do something different in music, it has to be alternative. Well, I say this, we get caught in those whole things, but not knowing that, you know, alternative and rock and roll and things like that, what they call alternative, comes from a black-based thing. Afrobeat, rock and roll, funk, all that mm-hmm. in that whole thing. So I do say
right.
being different would be alternative. Anything that's
right.
coming different from the auto-tune heavy, Fruity Loops, if one person does it, if one person throws a filter on the intro of a song, it's got to be on every song. If every producer has to say their name on the track, this is a da-da-da track. And I think that's crazy.
Right.
Could you imagine Thriller and Quincy Jones came on there? This is a Quincy Jones track.
Right, right. Yeah, this is a Quincy Jones production. This is a Q production.
Chris, right, could you imagine that shit? Like
right,
really,
that would be crazy.
You know?
Yeah.
Right, that would be insane. Yeah, that's pretty funny, man.
And I'm,
yeah,
I'm very fearful. Yeah, no, that would be crazy. And I'm fearful of it because if it becomes the majority,
right.
then that will be the norm. That would set the precedence for that's the norm. Or
right.
you know, when you go there, that's the standard. When analog
right.
changed, Pro Tools became the standard.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So if we
right.
get a certain sound quality or a certain ear or a certain technology, that will become the standard. Where the standard
right.
where it be R&B for black people will be really one step away from being a hip-hop artist, because R&B artists now want to be hip-hop artists. They don't want
right.
to be R&B singers anymore. And it's neither rhythm and blues anymore. You know what I'm saying? It's
right.
really rhythm and bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Some of the most
right.
vulgar songs that you hear are by supposed to be troubadours, supposed to be vocalists, R&B vocalists. I mean, some of the vulgar
mm-hmm.
shit. Like, of course, if you hear
right.
Gucci Mane, you expect what you get out of Gucci Mane.
Oh, yeah.
Soulja Boy,
yeah.
you know.
Right.
But when you go
right.
hear somebody like Trey Songz or even R. Kelly, man, you know what I'm saying? Somebody like R. Kelly, who has the potential of doing something as incredible as I Believe I Can Fly. Not only
right.
lyrically, musically, for him to go
right.
do Feeling on Your Booty or some shit like that, or it's like, yo.
Right.
So in order to be relevant or make a career or do anything like that, you have to, as a black artist, dumb the music down because we don't accept anything about that. So now the audience
right.
is not only is dumbed down, you know, they can't hear
right.
genius when it's come or something that, you know what I mean?
Right.
Is that our
I mean,
future?
No one, yeah, no one's trying to make, not trying to leave a great legacy. People not think about legacy. People think about that fly by night record. I mean, 20 years from now, what are we really going to be thinking about as a classic record? We're going to keep going back to the 60s and 70s and maybe 80s to really find a classic album. And that's a shame because, I mean, think about it. When the Beatles finally got on iTunes, it was like you would have thought that that was a brand new group. They were all over the city. The billboards were everywhere in LA. The Beatles on iTunes. I was like, that just tells me that the music game is suffering. When you got people going crazy over the Beatles being on iTunes, it was almost like, okay, you don't have their albums, like you don't have nothing by the Beatles, you know, like that is it was a big event, and that made me feel as though we are in trouble. You know, I love the Beatles, but when people going crazy over them being on iTunes, we are in trouble.
Nah, we're definitely like. You know what? I love the internet on the standpoint of, and I was having this conversation with somebody else. We will get to a point where selling music will not be a factor anymore. So it's a pro and a con with that. Now the records will have to be great. They have to be good because the records will have to allow you to merchandise and to travel and tour. So
right.
now with the internet, the go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's what the music game was built upon, you know, making a record and going on tour, you know, and that's
right.
And a lot of these artists are not touring, not stage artists, you know, just that's truth be told. A lot of these
right.
Artists touring are not seasoned. No, they're not seasoned to go out and, you know, a lot of artists nowadays are shower singers. Let's just be real, and they have hit records, but Are they ready to go on stage? A lot of them aren't. They just they get signed, they do a record, and they're pushed up on stage, and then people wonder why they sound terrible. You know, there is no development, none. You know, so it's not the artist's fault.
I think Neil, and like you said, because that was always the part of the process, that you make records so that you can tour. And that comes from the whole thing of the old industry, because Mr. Label owner has his hands so much in the artist's pocket. That was the only way the artist can make money, by traveling and touring. Now, like you said, there's so many non-roadworthy artists out there. You don't want to see them perform.
Right.
And, walking around on stage, holding their nuts, or not singing the songs, not sounding like they're supposed to because of auto-tune.
Right.
You know, I think, you know what, auto-tune had been around, the vocoder had been around for years, auto-tune, correcting tune and pitch had been around for years, but then we got this weird way of using the plug-in or using the effect incorrectly, where it almost sounds mechanic and robotic. And
right.
Now the ear is, you know, you talk to some people, they look for that sound. A record is not correct until it has that sound.
Right. Right. True.
And that's the fear I got. If you did hear something great, would our audience now, the audience today, the music listeners today, would they know that it's great that they're hearing now because of so much of the dumbed down situation?
Right. True.
Yeah.
Black
music as a whole, I hate doing that, man, because now it does seem like you're talking about races and all that, but I'll say this about Blue-Eyed Soul, and I say this about the white artists. They still experiment and try, you know what I'm saying? They try to do something different. We set in this, look, it has to be this way or nothing.
Right, right, exactly. Like, we're not trying to make something really great. Like, we make records based on fear, based on what the last person did, because we feel as though that's the only way that we're going to be accepted, is if we do something that what Beyonce did, or something that another artist did. Like, you know, like, we're on the bandwagon of the last hit, you know, and that's a shame. And it shouldn't be like that. It should be like, don't have the confidence to do what you do, and it's a shame that people don't have that confidence, because they think people want to hear that same sound, and it's one of those things that just, you know, and that's how trends happen, because people want to jump on this trend, you know what I mean? And music wasn't based around that, you know. It was based on doing what you feel. It's supposed to be a natural feeling, and not something that's forced. And that's why we really don't have a lot of great records now. And that's why that a young lady said, hey, Beyonce's record's crap, you know. You know, it's the reason why she said that, you know what I mean?
Right. I actually like Solange a little better than Beyonce anyway.
I'm a Solange fan. I mean, I loved working with her. And if you go on YouTube and you really look her up, you would see that, wow, she's trying to do something different, you know. And it's a shame that she's not getting recognized for that. And those are one things that we really have to notice. Like, look, this young lady is doing some really good music and trying to stand outside of her sister, but nobody wants to listen. Why is that? You know?
I think that's different. What we put that cancer on it, the different artists. If you don't fit in that mold, as a black artist, are you destined not to have that fame, that popularity, or that survival technique? You know what I mean? Like if it's only one can come out, you can only have CeeLo now, and that's the weirdest we're going to get right now. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, it's... celebrity in the 21st century is a phenomenon, man. It really is.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenon. To be a celebrity now, it's a whole nother level, man.
It's not a talent thing to be a celebrity now. It's almost who the hell you slept with. You know what I mean?
Right.
Who saw
right.
you out
right.
drunken and had a rage? By the time
uh-huh.
someone like Paris Hilton can go make a fucking song, who never stepped one day, had a lesson and played no instrument, doesn't no tone
right.
deaf. I mean,
right.
you understand where it goes. You see a Atlanta housewife where Don't Be Tardy to the Party was a big song. So now we're making it like,
right.
you know, talent is not what it is. What makes the musician different from the layman? You know what I mean?
It's all about the circles that you hang in. It's all about your affiliation. You know, it's about
right.
being a socialite. You know, like the Kim Kardashians and Paris Hilton, they were rolling in certain circles, and that's what made them popular. It's like who they were hanging out at the club, you know, and who they were associated with. I think at one time Kim Kardashian was associated with Paris Hilton. I think, if I can remember,
right.
I'm probably wrong. But she was associated with another popular socialite that was part of a rich family. And Kim Kardashian was part of her father was the famous lawyer that was on the O.J. Simpson trial, but then she was hanging out with Paris Hilton. So everything is connected, you know, to something else other than talent. You know what I mean?
Right.
So in order to be a socialite that hangs out at the clubs and, you know, doing your thing, like Lindsay Lohan is not recognized for her acting talent or for anything else. She's, you know, recognized, she's a celebrity because she had too many drinks at the club, you know, and then she
right.
went to rehab. And now, you know, it's just crazy now. Those were things that Hollywood tried to hide. You know, if Rock Hudson was a young actor coming up now, you know, it would be cool for him to come out as a gay man. But back in the day, no, they had to cover that up. I mean, you had to go out they had to hook you up with a famous actress in order to make you not look like you were gay. It was taboo. Now, you know, hey, it's so times are changing. Nothing is. I'm not saying anything about being gay. I'm saying that, you know, times are different now, where things that were hidden are now coming out. Now it's about being out. It's about being who you are, and that's a beautiful thing, because you know life is not about hiding. It's about being who you are and being accepted. So that's great, you know what I mean? But
right.
that's how times have changed. It's about how much I am out there and who I am and how wild I am. It's not about talent.
Yeah. Sad. I look, alive or present, having already done, you know, which is a major milestone, Earth, Wind, and Fire, legendary, man. That's like, you know, some people can stop working at that point. You know what I'm saying? But live or not, live, past or present, and I'll take a caller because we got another caller, past or present, who is somebody you would love to work with at this point in your career? And call it, listen, hold on one second.
At this point in my career, the first person I think is probably like a Barbara Streisand.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
That's where I want to go, you know. It's about working with legends. And I love working with new talent, too. It's about new talent and it's about legends, about working with people that, you know, doing things that I would just love to just be in a room with her, incredible vocalist, incredible voice, you know what I mean?
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. We got to talk about that. Well, let's take a caller real quick. Caller, Anti-Robot Radio. I'm talking to the incredible Neil Pogue. Welcome to the show, caller.
Hello?
Are we there?
Hello?
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 Yes, you're here. Welcome to the show.
Can you hear me? I'm sorry.
I can hear you great.
Oh, hi. This is Melanin.
Hello, Melanin.
Hello, Mr. Paul. Hello, Mr. Moonshine.
Wow.
I just want to say that, you know, make a long story short, I really respect what you do. You've always been, both of you have always been an inspiration. And Neil, on the engineering side, you know, big inspiration. You always keep it moving. You always keep reinventing yourself. And it's something you said I tuned in at the end when you were talking about being a socialite. That's something that I suffer from as an artist because, you know, I've done the work as understanding what it takes to be a sound engineer, and I actually went and got classically trained in double bass, and I still find myself frustrated because I'm not the socialite type. Now I'm finding I have all these different attributes to make a record. I feel that I'm, you know, in time with what is going on, and I have something that can be new to the game, but it's the socialite thing. It's kind of like I've turned into this introvert. And, of course, if I had my own setup the way I wanted, I really wouldn't need anybody to make the things come out. But do you have any suggestions or any advice that you can give me as far as my frustrations, my blocks? Have you ever had any blockages when it came to producing? Is that something that's normal? Because, you know, I kind of was giving up because, you know, I come in here and I want to do some chords or play some bass or write, and I don't know what to do first, and then I just get frustrated and stuck, and I'm not really putting myself in a circle of people because I've kind of just, you know, shied away and went in my hole. So, you know, when you said that socialite thing, it's like I feel like that's probably my problem. I'm not really putting myself in an environment with other musicians and engineers and artists to make, you know, this thing come alive. So I'm kind of stuck.
Well, being a socialite and being a social person is two different things. So, I mean, if you're not out there being social with other musicians and with producers or people that you can, because you got to have some type of a social network where you can go and learn from other people. There's always something to learn and to share. But to be in your own little, I call it your own private Idaho, that's never been the way to really get your talent out there. You have to mingle, you know, from the beginning of time. We've always mingled, from jazz artists to hip-hop artists to everybody. We always mingle. We go to the clubs. We go here. We go there. So you're being counterproductive not mingling with your fellow musicians.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and all right. Well, thank you so much. Moonshine, do you have any suggestions for me? I know you've been trying to get me to, you know, come out the hole. It's making me very draining. I'm sorry.
I'll say this, and like Neil said, I mean, of course, it'll be hard to stick in a bubble, but as far as, like, production and producing yourself and just trying to get over that little writer's block, I think that you should go and express yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you have to keep going. And once you find out who you want to be, knowing who you want to be and what do you want to portray as an artist and what you want to get out, then I think the whole sound thing will come together. Know that this, in the beginning, while you're trying to find yourself, the songs may not be the greatest. Or maybe they may be the greatest. You just don't have the ear to understand that's the sound right now. So you have to go through that whole mesh and that whole growing period. I think now, you know, it's a time where you can close off and be in yourself, and a time, like Neil said, co-mingling and mingling. If you meet another, if you're playing bass and you meet another bassist or you meet another piano player, that may bring out something in their thought process that'll help you write, you know. I just think you can't overthink it. A lot of the things that we discussed in this conversation, man, when it was talking with Neil, is not overthinking it. We live in an over-processed world where everything has to be perfect. And a lot of times, like we were saying, that the things that don't sound as perfect are the most beautiful flower. I just think, like I always tell you, that I think you should just do it. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
as it comes, you'll find out who you are. I think finding out who you are musically will end the whole writer's block, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I would say don't listen to any new music. Listen to the old music. And that's why a lot of these other artists that sound different, I think a lot of these other artists from England, from overseas, they're listening to, you know, like the old soul music and stuff, older music from back in the day. And then they take that and they mix it to what they're doing now with the up-to-date sounds and making something new. You know, that's the reason why Adele is winning and Lorde is winning, because they're listening to what we used to do and bringing it up towards and bringing it to what's happening now and creating something new. And that's what we have to start doing. We have to listen to what we used to do and don't listen to what's happening now. Because if you listen to what's happening now and you try to write some stuff, I think that creates writer's block, because you're trying to keep up with the Joneses. So it's about, and I'm not saying that's what you're doing, I'm not sure what you're doing, but I'm just saying in case you are doing that, just turn the radio off, turn videos off, turn all that off, just do you. Just put on some older music and just vibe to it. And I think you get out the writer's block.
Yeah, it's funny. Okay, I know other people want to come. It's funny, it's funny that you say that, because I don't listen to anything. And when I do turn on the radio, it's like, okay, where the hell have I been? Because whatever this is not me. Maybe my stuff is too weird. I mean, I'll go back to the Hazel Scotts, and, you know, I love the old Nine Inch Nail, and I love Alanis Morissette. So I think you're right. I just need to understand that whatever I do is not going to be perfect. And get it out, and then, you know, it'll flow.
If you hate on yourself, that's not going to help either. So, I mean, because the first thing you said was, my stuff is weird. You know, who says it is? Just do it.
Right.
You know, don't even think your stuff is weird. Think if your stuff is new and fresh, you know. That's the first step you got to take. Don't put yourself down. You know what I mean? Don't think of it. You just do it. And that's what I was telling Moonshine before, that people are not doing what they feel, because there's so much peer pressure. Don't feel that pressure. Do what you do. Just because people are out there winning doesn't make your stuff weird.
Right.
Right. Well, thank you so much, you guys. I really appreciate that, and thank you.
No, it's all good. Hey, put that together so we won't have to have this conversation again. Do you think?
Right. Exactly.
Nobody, you know what I'm saying? Nobody can be a better you than you.
Yep.
Period.
Yep.
Nah,
absolutely.
It definitely, man. I'm glad to hear singers and people in the music or aspiring to be in the music business are listening to this conversation, because a lot of things I know, at least when I was coming in, man, a lot of things wasn't told. You kind of had to. They wanted to see you fall, you know, fall on that glass to understand the lesson. And to hear a conversation like that, if you're an artist or a producer, or engineer, or musician, to hear this kind of conversation is important. It's just important for the art in itself, you know?
Yeah, because we've got to help each other, and that's one thing that, you know, a lot of us don't do. We got to help each other. We got to look out for each other. We have to inspire each other to do better, to reach higher. Because right now, a lot of people are not reaching higher. They're reaching for what's next to them, you know, and what's next to them is what they were listening to and trying to copy that, you know, but reach higher.
We got to reach higher. Spirit de Corpse, what's happening with that? I see a show coming up soon in Atlanta with Mama Moonshine. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, they're Esprit de Corps. People who don't know, they're a reggae-inspired group, and it's kind of fused with reggae and different sounds, you know what I mean, soul, pop, you know, and creating something new. It's not something that the major systems are going to get, because it's not what's really happening, but it's something that we've been having fun with. I'm not part of the group, but I'm a producer of the group, and It's one of my personal babies because it's something that's fresh and I think is new and something that I would love to see, you know, win. It's been something that I've been developing for the last couple of years and kind of been on like a low simmer, you know what I mean? Because sometimes it takes a while for you to find something within something, and this is one of those things that you have to really make sure that it's right in the field, feels good. So they haven't done a lot of shows, but been doing a lot of writing, just a lot of soul searching. And so, so they have a, you know, long story short, they have a show coming up on the 10th, and it's at the Union at the East Village here in ATL. If you know the place, come on out on Friday and check them out here in ATL and come have some fun. It's going to be some music. We're going to have DJ Kirk on the wheels of steel spinning, you know, spinning some classic records, and then we'll have Mama's Moonshine doing their thing, and Esprit de Corps is going to do there. So it's going to have some fun, you know?
No, that sounds like cool, man. I was talking to Fleetwood Coup de Ville about trying to see if we can bring that show to Miami. That would be cool, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It would be great, man.
That would be cool.
Say the word and we'll be there.
Be there, huh? And we got to talk about trying to do something, man. Booking
man,
the whole show,
man.
Why not? You know what I mean?
Make it happen, man. Yeah, we're trying to travel, man. We definitely trying to travel.
So we got to talk about that, see how that can happen.
Yes, sir.
That's not a far-fetched thing at all.
Not at all. But to do it, as they say, right?
Right. I think it's cool that Neil, that you like to work with, you know, new, obscure, and legendary people, because, you know what, even coming up, we talking production, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
No more do we have those producers like that. We speak about Quincy Jones, of course, but when we go further up, and I mean, I'm not just sticking to any color or genre, like we don't have any more producers. Like, I used to look up to the Dust Brothers. Remember the Dust Brothers?
Yeah.
Paul Boutique
it.
And it all that. Oh,
man. Oh, yeah. Loved it. They were doing their thing back in the 90s, man. Back in
the 80s, right? Right. The 80s. Late 80s and
90s. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Love the Dust Brothers stuff, the stuff they did with, of course, the Beastie Boys, Paul's Boutique,
mm-hmm.
all the way to the stuff
right.
they did with Beck.
Innovative, man. Innovative.
Very
stuff.
Innovative. No more do we have stuff like that. And I tell you, a lot of people forget, like, groups like TV on the Radio. It's not a bunch of TV on the radios. And people don't look at that as even a black band. A lot of us don't know about TV on the Radio.
Right.
Incredible band. I like producers like, if we're talking of the data, I like producers like Danger Mouse. I like his thought process on things and how he tries to even take something that you've heard and make it different into something else.
Danger just did an incredible song with U2 for the Mandela film, for the Mandela movie, man. A great ending credit song, man. So Danger Mouse is doing his thing. He's producing U2. Who would ever thought that right there?
Yeah, whoever thought that. I read, Neil, that not too long ago that he was doing their whole upcoming album.
See, that's dope. See, that right there is trying to create something new. That there is called fusion, man. You know, and create something new, and they're gonna win, because that song I heard didn't sound like a Danger Mouse song. So he's trying to, you know, so he's melting himself within what they're doing and creating something really, really great. And the song is an incredible song.
Oh man, I didn't get to hear that. I gotta go run and check that out.
Yeah,
the film, you dug the film. I must check it out. The film was great.
Yeah, I dug the film. I really did, man. I think it's Idris Elba's, you know, shining moment, and I'm really proud that he really made that project his, because that's a role that you really can't jump in and, you know, and feel confident about. I'm sure he was nervous playing the great Mandela, you know?
Right, right. I need to go see that tonight. That's I gotta see that. Man, Neil, man, look, you've been on the phone with me for 3 hours, man. It's always a pleasure, man, having you on.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll be calling on you to come back, man, because so much always to talk about, man, and just incredible insight on everything, man.
Always
enjoy
man. We gotta get our Roger Ebert on. You know, that's how we do.
Right. That's what it's about, man. Next time we talk, man, I'm gonna throw a couple of other songs, maybe some classics, and tell me what you think about the approach. We'll get real scientific in it. You know.
Yeah.
Nah. So
let's get out there and teach. You know what I mean? Definitely.
That's what it's about, man. You know, you always got a home here, brother. I appreciate you, man. Every time rapping with you, man, it is a pleasure, man.
Good.
Pleasure.
Definitely a pleasure here too. It was fun,
man.
As always. Always fun. It's always good to have a platform you can kind of vent and, you know, let
right.
it out. That's great. Share thoughts
that's
with
what
the
it
listeners.
Is.
Great. Yeah.
That's right. Hey, before you leave, though, give them all the information where they can catch you at, everything else. Make sure you plug all that. They need to have all that.
Yeah, you can catch me on Twitter at Neil the Mixer. That's NEALDAMIXER. You can catch me. You can get me on my website, which is www.neilhpogue.com. NEALHPOGUE. NeilHpogue.com. Where else can you catch me? I'm on Instagram, Neil Pogue. Where else am I? I am, I'm on Facebook, Neil Harrington Pogue. You know, it's HARRINGTON. Proud of that middle name. Neil Harrington Pogue. And I'm everywhere. Just Google and everything will pop up, I'm sure. Google my name and all my little social networking will pop up.
Cool, brother. Hey, man, it's been a pleasure. You know, we'll be rapping again, man.
Yes, sir.
So it's all good, man. Enjoy your night, man. It's a pleasure.
Hey. Oh, yeah, always. Enjoy yours, man. Definitely.
All right,
it's
brother.
It's been fun.
Keep it funky.
Yes,
Neil
sir.
Pogue, Anti-Robots. The incredible Neil Pogue. Yeah. If you get a chance, check out this brother's works, his discography, everything. Check out the new Earth, Wind, and Fire stuff. Check out everything this brother's done. You won't be disappointed. Neil Pogue, Anti-Robot Radio. We will be right back. The Fabulous Moonshine Brown, my guest tonight was the incredible Neil Pogue. We'll be right back.
and Mr. Blood. And you the fast day grinder entertainment on Facebook and Twitter. When it's stay grinding, yeah, stay grinding entertainment, 2013 until.
Yes, indeed. Anti-Robots. What's happening? Anti-Robot Radio with Fabulous Moonshine Brown. My guest tonight was the incredible, incredible Neil Pogue. Incredible interview. If you got caught that late, half of that, man, it's a three-hour interview. Incredible, 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 incredible interview, man. Go back and check that out, www.antirobotradio.us. You can hit us and find us on Facebook. Go that, like the page and say what's up. Anti-Robot Radio on Facebook. Anti-Robot Radio on Twitter, just like that. Fabulous Moonshine Brown on Facebook and the Fabulous Moonshine Brown on Twitter. Go check that. Also, man, hey, like I said earlier, man, you know, and all shout-outs to the sister network, SRN, Survivor Radio Network. Those of y'all long-time listeners of the show know that we were on Survivor Radio Network. But now, check this out, now you will be catching Anti-Robot Radio on one place where robots don't lay their heads. We are here with Anti-Robot Network. It's the network now, from a show to a network. Cool shows. Wednesday night, like I said, we have the brother T-Life, and it's incredible. It's a great show, incredible show. T-Life does Wednesday nights at 9, Social Rehab, starring T-Life and the Gullah Brothers. Incredible interviews, man. More to come, Yank Radio, more to come. Hey, we'll be showcasing everything, man. Everything dealing with art, music, film, fashion, and politics from an unapologetic, unrobotic forum. And this is freedom as you know it. This is Anti-Robot Network. Are you anti-robot or are you just a fucking robot? Dig it. Incredible interview, Neil. If you get a chance, go back, check out my brother Neil Pohl. Maybe we'll put on a partial part of the interview, because the interview was incredible. 3 hours of incredible information. If you're a singer, a DJ, a musician, anybody, this was an incredible, incredible tell-all, know-all book interview from an incredible person. Go, if you get a chance, go look up Neil Pogue, if you think I'm exaggerating. Grammy Award winning. And you heard that he worked with the great, legendary Earth, Wind, and Fire. So incredible information. Get that information. Go back and rewind at www.antirobotradio.us. Go hear it again. Hear it live. It'll be playing all week. This is the network. Incredible. Hey, anti-robots, anti-robots. Like I said, incredible week. I dropped Negro American this week. Incredible response. I would like to give all those who downloaded that, and all the support that I got in just a few days, man. We're talking about 2 days of Negro American being out, the concept album. All those who supported, man, thank you very much, man. Matter of fact, I think I'm going to pull up another song. If you haven't downloaded Negro American, go do that. Go to Bandcamp. If you're on Instagram, go to Moonshine Brown on Instagram, and in the bio you'll see the link for Bandcamp and Negro American. If you're on Facebook, go to my page, Moonshine Brown, and go to the link for Bandcamp for Negro American. Go do that. Or hell, just go to Bandcamp, search Moonshine Brown's Negro American, and pop, there it is. Hear it out, download it, love it. Black rock at its finest point, I would say, you know, Negro American. Hey. So let's do this right now. Another song from Negro American before we leave. I got to play this one. This is Optical Illusion. Dig that. Negro American, the Fabulous Moonshine Brown. We'll be back. Optical Illusion. You want it?
However do you need it? I got
That's optical illusion. It's causing me confusion. Hey, that's Optical Illusions from the Negro American album, the concept album, the story of the Negro American in the so-called land of the free. Hey, next week when we come on, we're going to do a whole Negro American special where we will act out and play the concept album, the story. Go download that so you can be a part of the concept and the story. Go to Bandcamp, The Fabulous Moonshine Brown, Negro American. Go download that now, right now, needs now. If anybody out there, just need to be heard. Hey, 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 I'm sure I'll play another one before we go. Real quick, man, you know, I incredible interview with my guest, Neil Pohl. Incredible Neil Pohl. I didn't get into my weekly fuckery yet. I just want to say a couple of things. I got to say something against the robotic regime. That's what it's about. So before we leave, I want to let you in on something great, some new news that's happening that I need you to know. Remember this, art is supposed to make you question everything. Question everything you hear, you see, question all expressions, and this was about anti-robot radio. Our job here, the disclaimer here is our job here is to make you question the existence, the robotic existence. Headlines, shocking, there is no hell, fire, Adam and Eve are not real, Pope Francis exposes. So these headlines read like this. The Pope Francis has came out and said, there is no hellfire. There is no hell. There is no Adam or Eve. And it took the Pope, the motherfucking Pope, to say this. I'll read this real quick. One man who is out to open many old secrets in the Catholic Church is Pope Francis. Some of the beliefs that are held in the church, but contrary to the loving nature of God, are now being set aside by the Pope, who was recently named the Man of the Year by Time Magazine. And this is a quote from the Pope, the Man of the Year, Time Magazine. Pope Francis said this, through humility, soul-searching, and prayerful contemplation, we have gained a new understanding of certain dogmas. The church no longer believes in a literal hell where people suffer. This doctrine is incompatible with the infinite love of God. God is not a judge, but a friend and a lover of humanity. God seeks not to condemn, but only to embrace. Like the fable of Adam and Eve, we see hell as a literary device. Hell is merely a metaphor for the isolated soul, which, like all souls, ultimately will be united in love with God. Did you check that out? Now, I'm about to blow your cranium cap real quick. I'm about to blow your mind, right, real quick. What if our great Catholic Pope, our head of religion as we know it, that quote he just mentioned is a metaphysical quote? Are you hearing what I'm saying to you, anti-robots? That quote he just mentioned is a metaphysical quote. All right? That's not Catholic. That's not Christian. And this is from the Pope. Through humility and soul-searching and prayerful contemplation, we have gained a new understanding of certain dogmas. The church no longer believes in a literal hell where people suffer. This doctrine is incompatible with the infinite love of God. God is not a judge, but a friend and a lover of humanity. God seeks not to condemn, but only to embrace. Like the fable of Adam and Eve, we see hell as a literary device. Hell is merely a metaphor for the isolated soul, which, like all souls, ultimately will be united in love with God. So look, that comment right there, know this, and this is from the Pope, Catholic. That's not a Catholic thought. That is a metaphysical thought, and let's lead into the things that we talk about. God, God is love. Love is God. God means love. So always the thought process of a place where God will send you because he's a jealous God, and he's a God that punishes and gets you back and holds grudges. That's a human God. That's not the creator as we know it. That's a human God made by a human person. Now I'm looking at my producer. Says something very great real quick. This is the next question. Is this a metaphysical statement from a person that believes in a metaphysical sense? Or is it just like my producer just said, is it a way of trying to draw in those who are metaphysical? Wow. The greatest gift that the devil had was appearing not to be true, coming off not being real. So is this a statement, a metaphysical statement, or is this a statement to draw in those who are metaphysical? Either way you look at it, it's a very, very, very metaphysical statement coming from the leader of religion as we know it. You know, the Pope is the most revered and known religious person that we know. And as a Catholic, that this is not a Catholic belief, what he just pushed. And it has the church in the uproar. This is a very metaphysical statement. One last thing in this. In a shocking speech that is reverberating across the world, Pope Francis declared that all religions are true because they are true in the hearts of all those who believe in them. What other kind of truth is there? In the past, the church has been harsh on those in being morally wrong or sinful. Today, we no longer judge. Like a loving father, we never condemn our children. Our church is big enough for heterosexuals and homosexuals, for the pro-life and the pro-choice, for conservatives and liberals. Even communists are welcome and have joined us. We all love and worship the same God. God damn it. One thing I never saw in all this great thing, because the Pope decided that shit. Now we pushing all that shit aside because I'm the Pope, and this is, we got a home for heterosexuals and homosexuals, pro-life and pro-choice, conservatives and liberals. God damn it, is it a home for a nigga, the Pope? Not once was there a home for the Negro. Not one time. Is there a home for the nigga, Mr. Pope? God damn it. Anti-Robot Radio, the fabulous Moonshine Brown. We coming to the end. A huge big kiss to my beautiful daughters, Kyla Simone, Alana Love, Khaleesi Mon. Daddy love you. Good night. I didn't tell you good night last week, but hell, yeah, you know daddy love you, right? I love you. Good night. And yes, you heard it from the Pope's mouth. There is no hell. There is no damnation. There is no Adam, no Eve. Hell, all I want to know, is there a home for a nigga, Mr. Pope? I'm out. Negro American is out now. Download that shit and bow. All you thugs and haters, put the guns down. Stop the killing. 2014, that's what they say it is. God damn it, let's love. I'm the fabulous Moonshine Brown. And I'm out. Anti-Robot Radio, Gun Power, Negro American, go get that, download that. Bow.
Anti-Robot Radio. Sissies.